You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 18.
Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. I've got an amazing guest on today's show. I'm joined by Olympic swimmer Fran Halsall. It's not every day you get to meet and speak to an Olympic athlete, so I'm super chuffed that Fran has so kindly agreed to be on the show today. Fran was the youngest member of the Team England swim squad in the 2006 Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, where she won silver medals in the 4x100m freestyle and 4x100m medley relays. And throughout her swimming career, she's won a ton of medals, including 5 medals at the 2010 European Championships, 2 golds, 2 silvers and a bronze, and was a member of the 4x100m medley relay team that successfully defended their title for the second time. And in winning 5 medals, she became the most successful British swimmer ever at a single championships. Fran has also represented Great Britain at the Olympics. She retired in 2017 and has since transferred her experiences in the pool to the corporate world. So on today's episode, we're going to be exploring what it takes to get to the top of your game, some of the highs and lows along the way, and what it takes to deal with some of those lows. We're also going to be talking about Fran's personal experiences coming out of professional sport into a whole new world, what challenges she's faced and how she's overcome them to keep a Mojo Cup brimming, and what Fran has learned through sport and how that can apply to all of us, both in our personal and professional lives. So, wow, Fran, it is so exciting to have you. Welcome to the show and thanks so much for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. That was quite an intro. I'm like buzzing about that.
Well, you are totally amazing. You've been top of your game in the world of sport, an elite athlete. Can we maybe just start by, I'm quite nosy, share how did you get into swimming in the first place and what was it like then? Growing up in training.
So obviously for people that don't know much about swimming, swimming's quite a young person's sport. Kids tend to get into it quite young. You excel at a young age because there's a lot of training involved in what you do. But I started actually swimming at a club when I was 8, which is generally a bit late to start compared to most people. And the reason I got actually into swimming was because I was a hyper-competitive child. I had to win at absolutely everything that I did. And I loved sport. Any sport whatsoever, I wanted to be part of. So I first went to an athletics club. So I'm based in the Northwest. I was from Southport. So went to Edge Hill to go and explore athletics. And athletics, the guys there told me that I couldn't compete at the age that I was. I was too young to race, and you developed as an athlete before you could race. And that didn't sit well with me as this competitive 8-year-old. So I went to a swimming club and they said, yeah, come in, have a trial with us. We have club championships so you can race and do all that kind of stuff. I was like, great, brilliant. So I threw myself into swimming and I was awful.
Really?
Yeah, I was awful. It literally, I was probably 3 groups below where I should have been when I started. So everybody my age was 3 groups above me. but I had to master this skill. Like, so I found it really difficult to put my face in the water and turn my head to breathe. I just couldn't get it at all. So I was like way behind everybody to start with, but I was like a tenacious little thing and carried on working at it, working at it, working at it. And then when it clicked, it just seemed to click into place. And from then, like my being a young swimmer and a young athlete was actually really like successful for me. But it was the first bit of having to get to grips with the whole thing of I'm really not good at this that was really hard. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. It was the urge to want to compete and be competitive at a young age, unfortunately.
Well, do you know, that's really interesting, because you know, for lots of people, like two things that really struck me about what you said there. One is like people said you're too young, which is like one of these kind of beliefs sometimes we can then grow up with, like, oh, I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too this, too that, which is like a limitation that we then might put on ourselves. But also how you said you couldn't do it and you mastered it. What is it that was in you then that made you kind of do this stuff that lots of other people, I know when I was a child and I was rubbish at swimming, I still am to be fair, I was then really scared and that was it. So I kind of gave up. Why didn't you give up?
Do you know what? At the time, I probably didn't realise it, but only on my journey of finding out more about myself and more about myself as an athlete and as a person and what that all means, did I come to understand like what my actual personal values are. And you probably don't, you don't think about them when you're younger. Right? You don't think about what I actually value, what makes a good person, what makes me a good Fran. And two of the things that I've come to realize that are my values is honesty and always trying your best. So I had to try my best. And like, once you commit to something, it's committing to it properly and doing it to the best of your ability. And they're massive values for me. So I committed to, I wanted to swim properly and I wanted to race. And they wouldn't let me race if I couldn't master this technique. So I had to give my best every single day with the training and I had to master it because I'd set myself the goal of mastering this art of being able to do freestyle properly. So at the time, I didn't even think about it. It's like, right, I can do this, I can do this. And I suppose in lots of points in life, you think, I can do this. And then you're like, why is it not happening? But I just kept focusing on the process of what people were telling me. And I was like a really avid listener when I was a kid and still am now. I love listening, I love learning. So one of my biggest skills is that I will take on board what people say and listen and then do it. Like I was reading the Tao Te Ching, which is obviously old Chinese kind of scriptures, and they say in a lot of it, don't think, just act. And that literally was me as a child. Don't think about it, I just did it. Fran, do this, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Which then do down some interesting paths as you get older. Yeah. But as a child learning how to swim, it was kind of, that was my mindset. Don't act, just do. They want me to do this. This is how it should be done. So I'll do it until I get it right. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Because actually, and we'll come on to some of this about, you know, how do you achieve those, like these massive goals that you will have had, getting to the Olympics and competing at a high level. And this is something that I've learned only recently about consistency and showing up and taking action. So that's kind of one of the things that I work a lot with my clients on. It's you can kind of dream and believe stuff, but you need to be consistent. You need to be doing something every single day that's going to help you move forward and progress and take that action till you get there. So
100%. Like I 100% agree with that. And what I think that people think that athletes have this like magic thing that they do that nobody else knows about, but literally it's doing the processes and doing the basics right every single day. And the more that you do your basics right, you're closer to achieving your goal. So for example, I used to train 10 times a week. By the 10th session of the week, it's a Saturday morning, it's 5 a.m. It's freezing cold outside. I have to hit my targets in my session. Do I want to be there? No, I don't. But you're just committing to doing the process right because it's part of your goal. And you don't give yourself the choice when you've got a goal. It's like you've committed to it. So it's not a choice whether to go or not. And as I said, my values are, one of my values is to do my best and to have an honest, like, so if I got to the Olympics and I thought, yeah, I've done all this training, I've worked really hard, but I've missed that session, I'm not being honest with myself. So it's like holding yourself accountable to your values. And as you said, just consistently doing the basics right that people don't give you credit for is literally what athletes do day in, day out. Nobody talks about the fact that you turn up to your training session 45 minutes before it starts just to make sure you're ready to train. No one's giving you props or credit for that, but it's part of the process. It's doing that basic boring stuff day in, day out, that then all adds up to being closer to achieving the goal that you want to achieve.
Amazing. Amazing. I love that as well. You're right. Nobody says about turning up 45 minutes before.
No.
Just to be prepared to do it. And what do you do then, like on the days, because we all have them, and your schedule, training schedule, must have been absolutely relentless, and you would have had all the other things like growing up as a kid, that, you know, going to school and doing all that stuff as well. And on those days where, like you said, it's day 6 out of 7 or whatever, and it's dark and cold and you just don't feel like it, how do you get motivated just to keep going and be consistent?
Literally, I saw it as commitment over motivation. So on those days, like, I wasn't motivated to be there, but I was committed to my goal, and I had my goal so clear in my mind. My goal was a goal that ignited everything in me. It wasn't like I call it a hard goal, because it's not a smart goal. Like, nobody, it's not really an attainable goal for, I think, 98% of the population win an Olympic gold medal, is it? So it's not a small goal. It's one that ignited everything in me. And then because I had this goal that was so clear, that was so big, that was difficult, it was probably, I'm just like a 5'7" girl from Southport with no muscles and the lightest person in the event. Like, there was no reason for me to be standing up against 6'2" women that are stronger than me, heavier than me, taller than me, and be able to compete with them. But I'd set this goal, and I honestly guarantee, because I set my goal at that level, the performances I did in between came. So a lot of it's the opportunity to achieve the goal, then I have to achieve the goal. This is the goal I'm setting. I have this great opportunity to be able to achieve it. But because it's so big and because it fills me with so much joy, it instills like better performances along the way. And I think that achieving a goal and goal setting is massively important, but then the whole journey towards it has to be enjoyable, right? And that's one of the biggest things I learned from some of the hard parts of my career, was that the journey has to be enjoyable, and you have to celebrate those small successes on the way to your goal. Otherwise, what's the blooming point? Like, a goal is there to maybe achieve, like, it's a target, it's an aim, and you could get there, and that's exciting, but there's no guarantee either way. But if you don't set that, then you're guaranteed not to achieve it, aren't you, right?
Yeah, and also I like what you say about it kind of ignites you, because for me the goal is something that's going to just give you that inspiration. It's something you're working towards, but you're totally right, because the journey towards it, it's never going to be easy, is it? Otherwise, it wouldn't be this like really big dream and goal. So tell us about some of maybe your experiences then along the way during your career, some of your competitive achievements and your best moments, but also the really low moments. And how did you then keep going towards these, you know, this, like, I'm guessing it was the Olympics. It was the big goal. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, like, I suppose the interesting point, Joe. My goal was always to win an Olympic gold medal. That was my goal. And I didn't achieve that. And at points in my career, because I went to 3 Olympic Games, the first one was for experience. The second one was London 2012. And that was the one I'd hung my hat on. Home Olympics, home crowd. I mean, 19,000 people when you walk out in a stadium, like the whole stadium erupts when you walk out. And that was my time that I thought to shine and to achieve and to win that Olympic gold medal that I believed that I could win. And all I'd done for the 4 years before was, if I just sacrifice this now, then it'll all be worth it. If I just sacrifice this, it'll be worth it. But after that, when I didn't succeed, I understood that what I do is really cool. And I put all this pressure on myself, and I'd forgotten that to be under pressure in that kind of environment is actually a privilege. Like, it's a privilege to be able to stand up in front of thousands and thousands of people and people expecting you to deliver a result. And I miss that now. Like, I miss that feeling. And lots of people do get that from their jobs, that, God, I'm under pressure. But it's changing the pressure aspect and seeing, actually, I'm delivering something that's changing people's lives. It's making a difference to society. And it's given me direction and a goal and purpose. And I didn't, for the 4 years up to London, see it like that. So I went into London, my ego's completely wrapped up in swimming. Like, I couldn't separate Fran, who Fran was, from Fran the swimmer. And it didn't go well, and it didn't end well for me. I think I came fifth in the 50 meters freestyle. But that year, I actually ended up the second fastest person in the event in the world.
Yeah.
So I didn't perform on the day because I'd seen this pressure. This is the end of me, the build-up that I didn't enjoy. And this is the end then of all that. And then it kind of all went to pot. And because my ego was so wrapped around Fran the swimmer, I kind of felt like I was grieving. It was like a grieving process after it. I'd wake up in the night and be crying. I was like, what's up with me? I'm a really bad swimmer. I kept telling myself and telling people, I'm really bad at swimming. I'm not good at this, because I valued everything and my self-worth on an Olympic gold medal, and that's it. And Think about that logically, that's absolutely mental, isn't it?
Yeah, your whole identity has been around this gold medal. So mindset's massive in all of this, isn't it, in terms of both, in terms of the journey to get there. So it's, you know, you're there at the Olympics, like you say, there's like 19,000 people that, and it was 2012 as well, which was massive. And then there's, you don't succeed in the big dream, in the big goal. So tell us about mindset and how that's working for you or against you in these like particular moments.
It completely worked against me then. And I think that I'd had the 4 years before it, I hadn't built up much resilience, to be honest, because everything went really well for me. And so leading up to that, I hadn't had the opportunity to fail. So everything had just been like, so I went to 2008 Olympics as a rookie. Nobody expected anything from me. I made finals, came fourth in the anchor in the relay. And that was mega. I was like, wow, Fran, you're amazing. This is great. And then the sponsorship deals come in. Everybody's like talking then about London, and there's so much hype around it. You start to get involved in your own hype in a way. But also 2009, at 19, I won the world silver medal in the blue ribbon event of swimming, the 100 freestyle. 2010, as you mentioned, I won 5 medals at the European Championships. And then 2011, I actually dealt with an injury and came back and came fourth at the World Championships after only doing 4 months training. So that was seen as a massive success as well. So everything I'd done, I hadn't had the opportunity to understand what it is that makes me good at swimming, who I am as a person. It's just Fran the swimmer, and that people don't just like me because I'm good at swimming. They like me because I'm Fran. And unfortunately, I learned all those lessons on the biggest stage of them all at the Olympics. And that was when I really kind of had to, it tested my mentality hugely, those moments. And what I did was, I understood that I needed help with this. So I went and saw a sports psychologist, and I fortunately had the opportunity to see Steve Peters, who wrote The Chimp Paradox, and he's worked with the Liverpool Football Club. He worked with the British side. And he basically said to me in our first session, who do you think you are? You're just the glorified entertainer. And I was like, oh, I can't believe it. Steve Peters has just been so rude to me. Well, what he was saying was trying to get me to differentiate Fran, the elite athlete, performer, person who's like super confident, super driven, super kind of competitive, and who Fran actually is as a person. My parents, my family, my boyfriend, my like friends don't love me any more or less because I failed at an Olympics. That's just me who thinks that. And then we got into the whole thing around why do I think that everything's a sacrifice just for this one moment that could potentially happen? I have to enjoy year in, year out. And as I said, like what I was doing was a massive privilege. Like I got to travel the world. I got to test my body to the like most, like what it could do. Like it's like, limits. What could my body actually achieve like day in, day out? And it's when I really changed my mindset to, okay, what do I value here? What's important to me? What do I enjoy? That I actually started to perform better. When I was in that flow, I kind of got my mojo back. Like I was like, right, I understand me more now. I understand who I am, what I need to actually swim fast. So I just based it all on I'm competitive. I just need to get in and race. But actually, there's more to every human being than just one dimension, isn't there? And it's when I understood that it made me a more elite performer and more aware of everything that I was doing and made me understand that, yes, like, my goal is this. Here's all the processes I need in place to do that. But I need to be me in that as well. I can't just be the person that everybody expects me to be or how I think that Fran the athlete should be. It was more, okay, for example, we went to Berlin to the European Championships in 2014. And I was in great shape and I swam really well. I think I won three golds and two silvers at that European Championships. The day before I raced, I was out looking at the Brandenburg Gate eating a Frankfurt sausage because I wanted to experience being in Berlin and that being a really cool part of my job. And it didn't impact my swimming, funnily enough. Being happy and like engaged in what I was doing didn't impact what I actually wanted to achieve, which I'd thought that I had to be this robot of somebody to achieve, when actually it's the complete opposite. But you've got to let yourself go and understand that and try it, because it's actually quite a scary thing when you think, no, I'm this like robot athlete, can't do that, can't have a glass of wine if I've had a bad day, can't do this, can't do that, can't do the other, to then being, okay, like what do I need? Because I am a full person, I'm not just a robot athlete that blows bubbles for a living. It's like literally you've got to understand who you are, which was a massive journey for me, because as I said, you only learn that through the hard times and having to be resilient, I think.
Gosh, I love that. That is totally amazing, because actually I think you're right, sometimes when we're working towards something it feels like you've really got to sacrifice everything and it's got to be so hard and difficult and awful and not enjoyable because this is this big goal. But really what I'm also hearing, which is something that I massively believe in and work with my clients on, is this whole values piece about what matters to us most. Because when we discover and live our values, we then experience more positive emotions in our lives, don't we? Whereas when we're kind of going against them, or maybe we're living somebody else's values, we get it, that's the kind of not nice feeling stuff when it goes against the grain. So gosh, to hear like you as an elite athlete, you know, top of your game, actually when you felt probably, I guess what you're saying, like most comfortable with it and enjoying the journey around it, is when you're kind of discovering what matters most to you, and that you kind of relax a bit into yourself.
Exactly. And then you embrace the hard work more as well, because you don't see it as a chore. You don't see it as, oh, I'm just doing this as a means to an end. It's like, I'm here. This is great. I'm on a training camp. I'm getting paid to swim for a living. Wow. Like that's my life. I get to adhere to all my values. I get to give an honest performance. I get to try hard every day. And I get to like consistently push my boundaries. That's like mega that I get to do that. Right, let's train. And then like when I was in the water and I was like, feel horrendous. I'm not swimming fast today. Like businesses talk a lot about key performance indicators and not hitting any of them, and that would usually, because I'd know for a session exactly what times I needed to hit at every single point of that session that we were doing to know I was on track. And in the past I'd have been, oh, I'm off track, this is horrendous, and throw my dummy out. Whereas I'd like, I'm giving my best, and if that's my best, today, and I can honestly say that I've done my best today. Why am I getting angry at myself?
Yeah.
Some days is your day and some days isn't your day. And it's being okay with not having, like, being on form every single day, but know that you've committed and done your best.
Brilliant.
And it'll come. And then you kind of, why did I feel like that? You don't get angry about it. You just say, okay, what's happened for me to not hit those today? And you don't see it as like a real negative. You see it as I did my best, but on the day, that's all I could do. But I know I need to be here. So right now, what do I need to do to get there? And you see it more logically then. You don't see it as like a pressure or something that's going really wrong, or that you're going to be crap for the next week and your whole week goes off. It's just one day and you've given your best and that's all you could give. So then you're parking all the emotions to it, and then you just look at it as, okay, why did that happen then? So you're taking everything else out of it but the performance then, which was a massive learning for me. And I only learned it when I had I trained with my nearest rival in the UK. She moved into my squad, and I hated feeling like every single day I had to be better than her at everything, because that was my competitive side coming out. And if she beat me in one single rep in training, I'd lose the plot. I'd hate it and I'd be like angry. And I literally, when I understood that that was me on that one day, like that's that, and then understood that, right, I've tried my best, that's all that actually matters. Okay, how do I get better from here? It was a massive turning point. And yeah, it led me on to then obviously being as good and as successful as I was, really.
Yeah, I love that, because, you know, we have days, don't we? Oh, so many people, I mean, just talking to people this morning, some of my clients this morning, it's the same, beating themselves up because they've not done this, this and this. And then you get in the spiral, don't you? And that's just not, it just doesn't help you, does it? And it's, for me, it's always about, okay, that didn't work, or I didn't do that. What have I learned from that? How can I take that learning forward? How can I then make that part of something that is a habit then that is more helpful to me, that I can be consistent with, that I can practice with each day and keep taking action and move forward. So I love hearing how, like, you've dealt with all of that stuff. How about when you left the sport then? So you've been all your life with these huge goals. You've been showing up consistently every single day in these habits, routines, all of that, and then you leave the sport. What happens? Do you feel lost? Do you take that with you into the next thing that you do?
It's a really, really interesting time for any athlete coming out of sport, and people deal with it so differently, but a lot of athletes come out of sport and don't deal with the transition very well. And sometimes it's obviously because their sports can come to an end quickly because, like, they've got injured or been dropped from funding because they've had one bad year, so they can't afford then to train another year. And for me, I'd made the decision that I was done with sport. Like, I'd given my everything to it. That was going to be my last Olympics. The only thing that had made my career any more successful was an Olympic gold medal. But by that point, I was really happy with my achievements and that they stood up, and I was ready to leave the sport. But what do you do? Who are you? Where should you direct your energy next? What skills do I have other than, like, being able to swim really quick, lift weights really well, and deliver performances on one-off occasions in front of people? That, like, what, how do you define what a career in sport has actually can bring to the table for a business? So that was really difficult, and I'm still learning that now. That's still like a learning thing, but you feel like you're 18 and having to choose your path for university and what your career path's going to be, but you're feeling like that a lot later down the line. So for me at 26, I was trying to understand all this and understand who I was, what I enjoyed, because you're in this bubble, you're in a bubble of sport, and I don't know what procurement is. I don't know what a profit and loss, like, form is. Like, how, what do you do? And then because you're also super, like, driven and wanting to succeed, you want to know the answers. So, but the name there to give you the answers. As a sports person, you've always got coaches, you've got sports scientists, nutritionists, there's people everywhere to get answers for everything you need. And there's nobody that can tell Fran Holsall what Fran Holsall is going to enjoy and be good at other than sport. So that's like, you've got to be really kind to yourself. And at times I definitely wasn't kind to myself in understanding that I should be doing this, I should be doing that, I should be able to know. And it was really frustrating for me that I lost my purpose.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, it was like a loss of purpose. And fortunately, I was really into coffee and like random as anything, but as swimmers, you don't spend as much time in bars, you spend more time in coffee shops. So I'd like spent a lot of time in coffee shops around the world and loved coffee. And I was like, right, I've got a bit of like a little stash pot of retirement fund to do something with, retiring from sport fund. I'll put it into something. So I put it into opening my own business, which was like a baptism of fire. Didn't have a clue. However, it gave me that purpose and it gave me that sense of every day I was getting up to do something that was either going to give me an income or not at the start, but it was something that I found that I was passionate about. And I was so grateful for that and being able to direct my energy and focus into that. Because if I hadn't, I'd have spent so much more time just worrying about not being the star of my own show, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many transferable lessons, aren't there, into personal life, professional life, business, from the things that you've been talking about. You've been talking about values and purpose and habits and consistency and, you know, setting goals and, you know, all of that is so relevant. And I think even more so for people right now that even the, you know, there's such a parallel between you coming out of being at the top of your game in sport into a whole different world and thinking, what do I do? And have I got these, what skills have I got? And, you know, what's my purpose? And maybe people at the moment who, because of the economy and the way things are during COVID, may have lost their job, may have been at the top of the game in their job and have come out of that and find themselves without any work. What do I do? Maybe, you know, their job has been their purpose in the same way that your sport was your purpose. What kind of pieces of advice then would you give people if they're, you know, they feel a bit lost at the moment because something has happened to them? They feel a bit dysregulated because maybe, you know, they're questioning their purpose. They're questioning whether, am I going to get another job? A lot of people like that I'm speaking to at the moment. Maybe I'm not good enough. What advice would you give them?
I'd say that it's really tough, and accepting and understanding that it is really tough and not trying to put on a front that that's not a hard situation to be in, and accepting that. I think once you accept how you're feeling about something, you're on the first step to progressing from it. So for me, when I accepted that I've lost my purpose, I could then go and like exhale and breathe out. Yeah. Give me that minute just to think and it be okay. Because you don't really give yourself a chance to think when you're in that spiral. And you're in that spiral, it's going round in your head, round in your head. Oh, I've lost my purpose. I need to get a new job. I need to do this, that, the other. And what everybody forgets in that situation and what I forgot is that you kind of have to, the more you relax about things, the more things come to you, which is totally like at loggerheads with what you want to do, because you want to try really, really hard and you want to give it your all. But sometimes just taking that breath and that minute lets everything inside you just relax and reset, reboot, and ready to move forward onto the next step, whatever that may be. And the second thing for me after that is always think about what you can control. Like in situation, you can't control a situation. Nobody can control situations that happen to them. But once you've stopped taking a breath, giving yourself a chance, you can choose how you respond to it. You can choose how you think about it moving forward. And that is like the biggest lesson that I learned from every up and down in my career, plus coming out of it and into business and not knowing what to do next, was even if to the point where some days for me controlling when I went for a run during the day, and like, because I had control of that, my mind was clearer. I knew I had a focus. I knew I had purpose to that day. Was I'm going to go for a run today, and I'm going to run this far. And then the rest of it falls into place. Your routine comes off the back of it, and your feelings towards what you're dealing with become easier to manage, and more clarity comes with it. And it, yeah, the clarity again, that I think is really important.
Yeah, amazing. It's been incredible to talk to you. Could talk to you all day. So you're working in the world of business now, and how can people maybe come and connect with you? Where can they find you?
So, well, LinkedIn's obviously the best place to find people at the moment. So I am on LinkedIn, but also I'm working with Jam Recruitment. And basically what their mission is massively in line with mine, and that it's about creating great teams and understanding that why that's important to move people forward and to educate people on what it is that great performances look like. So for me, putting into play and talking about my experiences as an Olympic athlete and sharing those stories with people with hope that they can benefit in some way to other people out there. That's kind of what I'm doing and what I'm up to in, at the moment, which is great because it's given me a massive sense of purpose, as we've talked about. And also one of my values is helping other people. So it's making me feel like I am 100% within working within my mojo at the moment.
Amazing. Brilliant. I love it. Thank you so much, Fran. It's been awesome.
Thank you. No, it's been great.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.